Am I on? Good morning, everyone. 8:15 a.m. Good stuff. Everybody got coffee? All right. Well, my name is Michael Atala. As the slide says, I am very excited to be here to kick off the Office and SharePoint and Exchange and Link tracks at TechEd Australia. This is my first trip to TechEd Australia. After 10 years at Microsoft, I finally come down to this event. It's a lot of fun. It's a little bit intimidating. I don't know you guys very well. I don't know the audience. This is a very big room. I was talking to my three-year-old son this morning, and he asked me when his daddy was presenting, because mommy's been teaching him what I'm doing here. And he informed me after I told him it was Wednesday morning that it was still Tuesday, and that I didn't need to worry about it yet. So I figure if I screw this up, I can come back tomorrow and try again. At least my three-year-old told me I could. So I love working on Office at Microsoft. And the reason I love working on Office at Microsoft, I've worked on other things at the company, is because we use the heck out of this product, this suite of, and I mean Office, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Excel, Exchange, SharePoint, Link, Project, Visio. I love working on something that we use so extensively, and I think, in fact, we use it to the point of depending on it to get through our days. Many of you at university perhaps took a psychology class at some point and learned about Abraham Maslow and his famous hierarchy of needs, which sort of surmised that you have to fulfill the most basic of needs in order to achieve self-actualization as a human being. He died in 1970, Maslow, and I think, had he survived to this day, he'd be an old man, but I think he would rewrite the hierarchy of needs, and I'm fairly certain just above water and food would be Outlook, and soon after that, SharePoint, and then Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And I actually, you know, it's a bad joke, because every tech ed session has to start with a bad joke, but it's true. We've become super dependent on getting our work done with Office, and that's why what we're doing with the new Office is so important to you, to us, to the users you all support. And as an avid user of Office myself, it's important to me personally. So I'm glad to talk to you about it today. What a tremendous time this is in the IT industry, really. A billion smartphones in just a few years is amazing, considering, you know, it wasn't too long ago that my first cell phone was a Motorola StarTAC. I don't know if you guys remember the flip phones. They looked like the Star Trek communicators with the antennas. There are probably a few people in the room today that weren't yet in the IT industry when that phone shipped. But today, we have phones in our hands that have more computing power than anybody could have imagined at that time. And all of them being used to get work done. Some of them, unfortunately, I see in this room with stainless steel backs and fruit logos on them, which I greatly prefer not to see, but that's okay, because that's part of the way the industry is evolving, and it's something that we at Microsoft have to respond to relative to Office. Also, I mean, how many of you have a 22-year-old in your place of work, just out of university, who showed up at work the first day, walked into your office as the IT director or perhaps CIO of your company, and told you what they thought technology was all about? In fact, some of you likely are 22-year-old IT managers just out of university who are confident that you know what technology is all about, because it is a tremendously different workforce that we deal with today that we have to deliver this new Office capability in. It is a workforce of four different generations, people who met their first computer at the age of 40 or 50 and people who met their first computer the day they were born. And I think that changes everything about how we have to deliver capabilities. You know this as well or better than I do, for sure. But the new Office has to help address that need. And this is sort of one of the major trends that we think about as we design products. And then the other thing is, you've all told us the cloud is top of your mind. Not all of you are moving to the cloud. It's a good bet all of you are thinking about the cloud. And the cloud is about more than just something in a web browser. And I think that's a simplistic view of the world that most of you know better than to think. And I think as we talk about the new Office, I'll talk about how we think about the cloud at Microsoft relative to Office. So what is this new Office all about? I promise this is my second slide. It's the only remaining slide in my deck, other than the one that says questions. And I'll move directly to product demos, because I'm told that's what you greatly prefer. And I greatly prefer it too. So let me tell you a little bit about what the new Office is, and let me jump to showing you the new Office. So when we thought about redesigning Office, and this is really a fundamental change in the way Office is designed, and the way you use it, and the way it's built and deployed, and we're going to talk about all those things today. One, this is the devices sitting in the front row. I was joking with a couple of folks in the front row about their shiny stainless steel products with the Apple on the back. That's okay. I understand that a lot of you carry those products today, and it's our responsibility at Microsoft to actually deliver a great experience on them. We'd greatly prefer that you use a different piece of hardware, but I'll get over it. We also want to think about, though, how to take advantage of this great new Windows 8 experience with Office. Because it really is a great new experience, and it's a fundamentally different way of interacting with a PC. And we want to make sure Office can take advantage of that. We also want to make sure that whatever device you carry, whatever form factor you carry, you can take that great Office experience with you, whether that's an iOS device or an Android device or hopefully a Windows device. Our responsibility to earn that great experience on Windows, though, and so I respect that. Office is also cloud connected. It's in the cloud. That's more than, again, just a web browser. That means that Office is connected to cloud services natively within the applications. Not open a web browser, copy, paste, right click, save, open, drag and drop. Actually native cloud service integration in the Office applications. It means that taking advantage of the cloud as a development platform and as a delivery model for applications built on top of Office is something we have to think about fundamentally. And it means that when we deliver cloud solutions in the more traditional hosted model, we think about how to deliver that in enterprise class capabilities and security and stability that you've come to count on in your own on-premises environments. But we want you to take advantage of the cloud whether you remain on-premises or whether you move mailboxes and SharePoint sites to the cloud, because all of that is part of being cloud connected. Office is also social, and this is again something that we think about more broadly than the social world of Facebook and the social world of things that maybe some of your teenage children use avidly. This is about news feeds, yes, it's about microblogging, yes, but it's about enterprise microblogging. It's also about making sure that we can follow things other than just people, and we can like things other than the latest cat video on the internet, but actually the websites and documents and people that we interact with at work. It's also about next generation meeting experiences. How many of you got to see that Perceptive Pixel 82-inch capacitive touchscreen on the show floor last night? That's a tremendous piece of hardware. It's at the top of the new hierarchy of needs. We all want one in our office. And that is actually the thing that will change the way we have meetings in the future, and multi-party, high-definition, interactive meetings with a screen in every conference room like that. That's the vision of the next generation of meetings. And then it's about control, because in this room, people care about management. People care about security, trust, and privacy. And we care deeply about earning that trust and giving you that data security and privacy. So bringing new capabilities to bear, like data loss prevention and next generation e-discovery and archiving capabilities across the whole of the Office portfolio is part of how we think about giving you more control over the Office experience you deliver to your users. So with that, I'm going to jump into showing you a little of what the new Office is all about. I'm going to start on this machine that I'm actually showing you a PowerPoint presentation from, which I'm actually using. This is a Samsung Win 8 tablet, Series 7. You guys maybe saw a couple of them on the stand the other night. So it's a great experience, really a great experience. But whether you're using an interactive, immersive Win 8 app or the traditional Office Experience apps, this is still a great device to use. And that's because, and I'll start in, that's too bad, I'm getting 4x3. Sorry about that, guys. I'll start in Outlook, which is, again, what I think sits right above food and water in that hierarchy of needs. First thing you'll notice when you look at Outlook here is that this is a really redesigned user experience. It's more beautiful. And that sounds maybe even a little funny to say about IT technology, but it's important today because the expectations of our users have changed, and delivering a more beautiful experience is important. They expect it of us. And so as I look at this experience, things like the ribbon, which we've all come to love over the last couple of versions of Office, is still there, but it stays out of the way if I don't need it. You'll also notice that folders are out of the way if I don't need it. I can scroll through my email with my finger, with touch. I can quickly reply to an email, perhaps, without actually having to open a new window. And this is important because it's keeping you in context as you interact with email in Outlook is an important way of we've redesigned the application. On different form factors like this one, where we might be on a device like a tablet sitting in a subway train or perhaps sitting in a coffee shop somewhere, the idea of opening up window upon window to manage your email, which is the way that many of us probably manage our email today. You get up in the morning, there's all the emails you have to reply to. You double click on all of them, you reply to all of them, and you start that reply for the day, and then throughout the day you work through that long list of windows that is opened in your on your desktop. But you don't want to have to do that. You want to be able to stay in context and stay into the task of actually replying to email. So if I do this quick inline reply, and I start typing that response, but then I move on to another email, I want to be able to see that that draft right there is still present in my inbox and jump right back to it without having to open a window or Alt-Tab through Windows and quickly discard it and go back to my inbox as necessary. I also want to stay in context with other actions. Let's say I'm sending an email and I want to quickly check my calendar. Normally, in today's version of mail applications, I might have to jump to my calendar, take a look, go back, find that email in the inbox, and then reply to it. So we introduced something called peaks with the new Outlook. And as I hover over the calendar, you actually saw it pop up for a second, you see a calendar peak show up. This is a fully interactive view of my calendar that I can quickly take a look at a meeting request and then jump right back to my inbox without actually having to change windows again. Important on these new form factors like a tablet. If I want to jump in and look at my calendar, I can do that, quickly double click. There's that traditional calendar view. But because I'm on this great touch device like this, I can swipe left and right. I can zoom. If I want, as you'd expect, semantic zoom. No problem. I'll just ignore the man under the counter next to me here. Trying to get me 16:9? Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. So looking at the new Outlook, you've got this new experience really optimized for a great tablet touch experience. I can jump around pretty easily with touch, but I can also use a mouse and a keyboard. And that's actually important because we think that no input device should be a second-class citizen. It shouldn't be that on one device you have to sacrifice how do you like to get your work done. So we want to make sure that you can pick up this stylus, pick up the keyboard, pick up the mouse, or use your finger as you see fit, depending on what is appropriate for your productivity experience. So I'll show you one more thing that is fundamentally different about the new Office, and I'll show it to you in Outlook. I mentioned development model. I mentioned taking advantage of cloud services from a developer perspective. Am I still on the screen? Yeah, you guys still see me up there? Yeah. So as a developer in the new Office, you have an opportunity to take advantage of a new development framework that extends to all of the Office applications in SharePoint that lets you build rich, interactive HTML5 applications, deliver them directly integrated into the Office application experience, and sell them to users direct or deliver them inside of a corporation directly through an integrated marketplace. And in this case, I'm going to show you a quick, where is it? Sorry, I lost my, there it is. In this case, I'm going to show you an email that actually has a group of people on it that are talking about where to have dinner this coming Thursday night. In this case, it's at one of the sushi restaurant in the Seattle area near Microsoft's headquarters that I actually like a great deal. And you'll notice that in this little bar right above the email, two applications are being suggested. These are apps for Office. These are third-party applications. In this case, one developed by our Bing Services team, but still external to Office, that are integrated into the Outlook experience, sandboxed from an execution perspective, so they can't interfere with the execution of Outlook, which is important relative to the old object model that we had in previous versions. What resolution are you sending? Oh, sorry. I'm being asked a question by my... I've got a whole bunch of stuff open. I'm going to check really quick. Looks like 1368 by 716. Okay, cool. All right. I'm going to go right back. So, again, two applications being suggested, and I'm going to jump right in to the Bing Maps app. So what you notice right away is that we get some hit highlighting in the email. Outlook's recognized that there's an address in here and has suggested the Bing Maps app because of the fact that there's an address in it, and it looks like it took a second to resolve. But what you see here is a fully interactive HTML5 web sandbox executing within the Outlook UI. Was it? It's all right. It's all right. It's not a big deal. Thanks. This is something I can zoom all the way in if I want to, get a nice street view of the restaurant. I can jump out if I need to get directions or a full-size map. But this is a sandbox protected environment that can't interfere with Outlook's execution, but allows a developer to deliver next-generation web app experiences right inside of Outlook. Now, imagine this is a great demo, frankly, and I think it's super relevant if you receive a lot of addresses in your email. However, just think about the different things that you have in your inbox that you, if you're a developer or another developer, could build. Think about tracking information for shipments. Think about information relative to line of business applications inside of your organization. Think about all the applications that could be built to leverage the information in your inbox. It's a tremendous amount of business-relevant information that we can leverage through this app model. If I jump to the second application being suggested, you can see that Outlook has done some natural language processing on the email. It's recognized that there's a suggestion to have dinner at a certain time. Now, this is beta software, so those of you with better eyesight will notice that the predicted date right here is just a little bit off. It's not May 10th that this Thursday is, but I promise we'll get that right before we ship it. But you will notice that what we've got right here is the copy-paste of the text that suggests that appointment, the correct time of 8 p.m., and all the applications already there, ready to go. Click Save to Calendar, pop up a meeting request, click Send. A super compelling way to extend the capabilities of the Office applications as a developer, and that's across Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, and SharePoint. So, right after you finish the hierarchy of needs with Outlook, you check your email, you got to get to your documents, you start opening SharePoint. The first thing that I talk to most people about relative to SharePoint is I talk about why it isn't better integrated with Outlook. Anybody in this room want to see better integration with Outlook and SharePoint? Need a little more energy out of the room. Clap, maybe, instead of the raising the hands. All right. Thank you. You should feel free to clap at anything I do for the rest of the presentation. So the first thing I'm going to show is the new concept we call site mailboxes in SharePoint. It's a common feature between Exchange and SharePoint Server that allows you to link a mailbox in Exchange to a team site in SharePoint. And as soon as you've done that, Outlook will auto-discover that mailbox and deliver it to every member of the site through Outlook. And let me show you what that looks like. Right here in my folder list, I'm going to pin my folder list temporarily, even though this form factor is not one that I normally would do that. You can see that right down here, I've got a new mailbox sitting at the same level as my personal mailbox called Marketing Campaigns. Now, this is a site mailbox. This is a mailbox directly linked to a SharePoint team site that I'm a member of and it had auto-provisioned into my Outlook client. This gives me both an inbox, a set of mail items, and a set of documents that everyone on the team site can collaborate on. So this means if I get email relative to a project, I can drag email in it, and every member of the team site gets to see that email right here. Same with documents. Now, this is important for a couple of reasons. One, it's a very compelling integration point for SharePoint in Outlook. But the other thing is one of the most challenging things about projects when you're in team projects is when new members join the project. You might have a distribution group associated with that project, but you won't have a historical record available to all of them unless you've done archiving of distribution groups. So this gives you an opportunity to add a new member to a team or a project that immediately gets all contextual email and document data available to them right in Outlook as soon as they join the team site. It also, from a security perspective, cuts them off from that access as soon as they've been removed from the team site. So the historical record is gone. Good from archiving and retention perspective, good from a security and privacy perspective, and good from a productivity perspective. So because of this tight integration with Outlook, I can jump in really quickly. I see that I have this Tailspin Toys proposal sitting in my inbox. And what I want to do is just drag that right into my SharePoint site. So with drag and drop, directly from Outlook inbox, right into a SharePoint site, I've just put that document into my team site. It's synchronizing up right now into my SharePoint team site. Now, what I'm looking at here is not a locally synced copy of SharePoint. This is a real-time look at my SharePoint document libraries, which means if I pull the network connection, it's gone. Now, with SkyDrive Pro in the new SharePoint, you can actually create that synced copy locally if you need it. But from a security perspective, if you don't want users to have access to this project while they're not connected to the network, you have that level of control. And just to show that I'm not making things up, I'm going to go ahead and hit open on a web browser and jump right into that SharePoint site. And you'll see at the bottom of this team site, there's that Tailspin Toys proposal that was posted about a minute ago by me. Now that we're sitting in SharePoint, we can pause for a second and admire the beauty of SharePoint. That doesn't necessarily, there's a round of applause, yay. SharePoint is good looking, which is great because SharePoint is where a lot of us spend a lot of our days and a lot of our users are going to spend more and more of their days. We want to make this a beautiful and engaging experience for users. You've got these great interactive tiles, you've got a timeline view that actually includes being able to change your project timeline and edit with a ribbon right there at the top. Now, this is a beautiful website, but maybe I want to redesign the website, make it look a little more appealing. That's something that admittedly hasn't been the easiest thing to do in the past, redesigning a website, changing the background. We made it a little bit easier. In this case, I'm going to just change the style of this SharePoint site. I'm presented with a few template options. I can choose one of them. I can create a new one. I'm going to pick this Blossom template. Notice right away I get a quick preview of what that might look like. I see that there's this flower in the background. I'm not a tremendous fan of the flower. What I actually want to do is drag this great picture of the Gold Coast in, which I'm just going to drag into my file folder, and there you go, a quick preview. If I click try it out, go ahead and start clapping, and then I'll wait. No, as I click try it out, what SharePoint's going to do now is it's going to generate a real preview of the site as it looks today with that new that new background image with that new color profile and give me a view of it and allow me to either apply it or ignore it and throw it away because I don't necessarily like the way it turned out. So there it is, exactly as that SharePoint site should look like. I can commit the change or I can jump out of the change. Just like that, redesign the look and the feel of a SharePoint site without any challenge and probably with no help desk call, which I think might be the most important thing. I'm going to go ahead and jump out of that, not commit the change. Somebody might ask to see that demo again, and I want to make sure I can. But SharePoint has more to it. In this case, I'm jumping into a SharePoint team site, my site, in Office 365, in the Office 365 preview. You can see, again, this new look and feel. My personal news feed is sitting on the screen. And when we think about news, it's social in SharePoint, we think about this for sure. But this news feed, this social engagement of microblogging is different in a work environment. So the idea of being able to use a tagging service, use a hashtag service to actually refer to business context items, to interact with people that you work with on a daily basis is relevant, but needs to be designed just slightly differently. We need to have things like, for example, documents that are posted that quickly preview in the web app in a touch-friendly way so that I can scroll through and take a look at those documents when they're posted. We also need to be able to take a look at videos that are posted if they're relevant to our business, stream straight from YouTube right there in the UI. If I need to like this, that's important. If I need to be able to reply to something, I want to be able to hit replies with address list. Quickly post to that UI. And why is liking and tagging important in an office experience? Because in the social experience that maybe some of our kids are accustomed to or we're accustomed to in our personal life, we follow things, but we don't necessarily follow things that are important for business. When we think about this in a SharePoint context, we think about following relative to business, meaning following documents, following sites, and following people. I need to be able to follow these documents, the documents that I follow most commonly at work, the sites I follow most commonly, and have SharePoint suggest other documents and sites and people that might relate to those folks I work with most closely. This way I can get notified of changes to websites, changes to people's titles and roles and responsibilities, or organizational reporting structure, or documents and how they are updated relative to business context. So a social experience, yes, but a business social experience in SharePoint. And frankly, let me see if I can get back to my document list really quick. Because we also want to be able to give you the experience. I'm not going to be able to get back. There it is. Have faith, folks. I promise. As we look at those documents that I'm posting in this document library, we also want to give you the ability to quickly preview documents. I showed you how you could preview a document in a news feed. You can do that also as you're looking with your library. If these are large documents that you don't want to necessarily download from SharePoint, the ability to quickly scroll through and again a real-time view of the document. PowerPoint presentations and web apps with animations, with web transitions built right in a preview mode before you have to download that to your local machine. In a desktop environment where you're network connected, not always something you think about. In an increasingly mobile workforce environment where bandwidth is constrained, this is an important way to experience SharePoint. So once you finish experiencing Outlook and SharePoint, you get up in the hierarchy of needs another level, and you start actually getting some work done from a productivity experience, you start with probably Word, maybe PowerPoint or Excel. I'm going to jump into Word, however, and give you a look at how this app is changing from an experience perspective. The first thing that you see when I open Word is that it looks a lot different from the very beginning. This is a new start place. This is the way Word opens and the way PowerPoint and Excel will open. And why is this different? Why is it important? Well, it's different because we have data that shows that about two-thirds of our users, and many of you in this room probably understand this, don't actually open a blank document when they first open Word. That's how Word has opened for years, but it turns out that most people open a recent document or a template. So we've simplified the UI down to simply those two actions, those two tasks, to make sure it's very straightforward to get into the two most common tasks. I can always jump in and open another document down here, but in this case, I want to open one of the two most recent documents I've worked with, which happens to be this fishing guide. I'm a fisherman in the state of Washington back in the U.S. I like fly fishing quite a lot, so this document's near and dear to me. What you see has happened here is Word's opened this document in what we call a new read mode. This is a document that I might want to read, and as a result, has opened in a mode that is free of menus and free of distraction so that I can consume this document as it was meant to be consumed. One of the things you may have noticed popped up in the lower left-hand corner just as I opened it was a little note that says, "Welcome back, pick up where you left off." Because as part of Office being cloud connected, and as part of Office thinking about your personalized version of the service, Office also remembers where you last were in a document. And in this case, I was on screen 5 reading this page. So everywhere I go, wherever I open this document from, if it's stored in SharePoint, if it's sitting on a USB drive, if it's sitting in my SkyDrive, Office will remember the last place I was reading it so that I can quickly jump to it. And after that, I can quickly jump in and read this. I can swipe through it. I can, as I read it, maybe I can collapse sections because I'm actually done reading that section. If I want to see this comment, I see photo, rich, presence enabled, threaded comment streams in Word for tracking changes. Now I have the ability to quickly follow comment streams right here in this read mode and jump into Elevate to an IM or video call or phone call conversation directly from reading a comment stream. I may want to edit this document though, so I can always jump back to that traditional view, get that ribbon back, and scroll through the document as I would have normally. In this case, maybe I want to add a photograph in this document because I think it's missing perhaps a picture of a coho salmon right here, which happens to be the type of salmon that I fish for most often. And so as part of Office being cloud connected, I want to be able to quickly pull an image off the web and stick it in this document. Historically, that might have meant opening a web browser, searching for the image, perhaps going through my personal images, saving it out, inserting it. In this case, I'm going to use a new capability called Insert Picture. What this is going to do is open a couple of search options for me, presenting the Office Clipart Library and a Bing Image Search. I'm going to quickly type coho. I'll get a couple of options. There's a few images. Warning that I shouldn't use these if I don't own them. In this case, a nice picture of a coho salmon, not a pretty fish, but a tasty fish, and inserted right in. So now a thing that might have taken me a couple of different windows and applications and some saving and then some copying and pasting is now a single step through Insert Online Picture, and you can do the same with videos. In this case, this image right here isn't exactly what I was expecting. It's a little bigger. I want to change the layout, so I'm going to pop up this little Layout Options UI, and I'm going to wrap the text around it. You can see right away the text moves up. But I also actually want to resize this a little bit. And you'll see as I resize it that I'm getting a live layout view of the document that's actually moving the text real time and giving me an option to actually put this exactly where I need and know exactly what my doc's going to look like afterwards, including guidelines that pin the doc to center points, end points. And I think that's exactly where I want to stick this. So the option to create really beautiful documents simply, without a lot of overhead, without a lot of complexity or user training. I'm really making Word documents more immersive and more beautiful with fewer steps. Now, how many of you have to use PDF files? Not have to, can get to use PDF files in your line of work? Yeah? You ever see a table in a PDF file you really, really want in your Word document and you try to copy paste it in? Doesn't always go so well, right? Let me open a blank document. We'll give everyone an example of that experience. Here's a small PDF file. It's got a little table in it. It's got some graphics. I really like the way this looks. I want to select all, maybe, copy this, and paste it into a document. That did not turn out the way I wanted. I wanted that table. I wanted that layout. I wanted that perfect PDF file right here. Something that you haven't been able to do really well with Word in the past, you can do now. With a feature called PDF Reflow, you can actually open that same PDF file directly into Word with all formatting retained in Word document format right here. Yeah, all right. PDF. You can edit it, save it back out as PDF, or you can edit and save it as a Word document. Really simple way to get full functionality, full productivity out of Word without having to switch to any other third-party applications to consume PDF files. So outside of Word, everybody's favorite application is Excel, right? Every day. Some people call this the most useful application in the Office portfolio. And man, for a lot of people, it is. They live and die in this thing. And the reason why they love it so much is, of course, because of spreadsheets like this that essentially look like I copy-pasted data out of a 15-year-old line of business application into Excel, hoping that it would look pretty, and I didn't get quite the result I needed. However, this is a common way that we look at Excel. It's the common data set. I've got this raw data copy-pasted. I've got a meeting in an hour, and I need to present this data in a really formatted way. Maybe my sales director wants it. Maybe a VP wants it. Maybe my boss is asking for it. Maybe I need it to send emails to everyone in this list. And so my traditional way of solving that problem would be to sit down and start typing as fast as I can. I'd go Nancy F at who has an AOL address, Nancy? That is good stuff. And then I start typing Andy. And Excel figured out what I was trying to do and finished my work for me with Flashfill. That's my favorite feature of Excel. And just to underscore that, I'm going to do a couple more Flashfill demos for you. Because it's even more than just extracting data out of a spreadsheet. It's also about reformatting it to make it better look, to make it more beautiful, make it more presentable. In this case, I've got two columns of names. I actually want a full name column. So again, I'm going to start typing Kim Abel, John Abbott, and there we go, a concatenated list of names. If this is thousands and thousands of lines of spreadsheet, I've just saved myself hours of typing, and I'm right back to work. But it can be, it's even one better than that. I told you it was my favorite feature, so I'm going to keep going. In this case, I want initials. But Excel didn't quite get it right this time. It turns out Excel didn't know exactly what to do with hyphenated names. So I've got to go in and correct this. But you'll notice there are a couple of errors on the spreadsheet that look similar. And in this case, Excel's going to recognize those pattern matches and correct them in the same way that I correct them once. One more time, it didn't know exactly what happened, what to do with those initials, middle initials. So if I correct this once, it'll correct it every time. Again, in just seconds, reformatting mass amounts of Excel data into very simple, beautiful layouts and very presentable ways. Get to do one more. This time, however, I'm going to talk a little bit about a practical application of Excel's data analysis tools after the fact. So here's a situation that you might be in. I've got this copy-paste of data. It's not exactly in the format I need it because I need to do some analysis in Excel, and that's where the power of Excel really comes through analysis. So let me break out this data really quick, as we've talked about. I'm going to get the category. There's Flashfill fixing that for me. Let me get the reps name out so I can organize the data. There's the names of the people that made these sales. Quickly highlight that data and do some analysis on it. So in just seconds, I've reformatted the data. I'm ready to analyze it instead of typing for hours. And now I'm going to use something called Quick Analysis, aptly named, to quickly analyze that data in this data set. These are real conditional formatting applied to this actual data set, not an image of a potential way that you could format the data. Same with charts. These are real bar charts using the real data, showing me some ways that this might be analyzed, suggesting possible analysis types for this data based on the type of data it is. If I click on this, I quickly insert that table into a new tab, and it's linked directly to the core data so that it's real and lives and gets modified as I change the data. But perhaps the most challenging thing to do with Excel is pivot tables, also one of the most powerful. We find that the broad majority of Excel users don't have any idea how to create a pivot table, and we don't actually think they should need to know how to create a pivot table. We think that we should do that for them. In this case, you see a few possible pivot table layouts, a quick check, and there's my pivot table. Already set up with my pivot table fields ready to go in just a few seconds. I talked a lot during that demo. That's really about 20 or 30 seconds of work, and I have a pivot table against my data set properly formatted. But wait, there's more. Excel, there's a lot of places in this world where Excel's data analysis tools could be super valuable. Maybe on a website. Maybe some people in this room are web developers, or perhaps they are working in a field like financial services where they actually present advanced data sets on the web and would like the power of Excel's tools to be available to them without having to copy-paste the data into Excel, or perhaps be available to their website users without actually having to sell them Office or have them fully installed on the latest versions of Office. So what you're looking at right here is one of those possible websites. A website, this case, is talking about an unfortunate company that leaked some financial information, but luckily it's positive information. In this case, I might want to take this data set is a common way that I might be looking at data on a website that I want to analyze with Excel. We talked about how you could copy-paste it into an Excel spreadsheet, use Flashfill to reformat it, and run a quick analysis on it. But if I'm a web developer and I know that's a use case for my website, with two lines of JavaScript, I can make this nice little button available right here. Excel Interactive View, which pulls up the Excel web app in a power pivot table against that data, fully interactive for the visitor on my website. I can reformat this data live. This is a live view of Excel. I can filter it as I need to, clear the filters. Well, there's two lines of JavaScript. I can deliver the power of Excel web services directly in my website experience to my users. Very cool new way to use Excel. So I'll move on. I'll jump into PowerPoint. I was using this earlier, so you guys got to see me present from it. But PowerPoint's, again, a more beautiful UI. Again, the ribbon is there, but out of the way if I don't need it. I can touch around in this if I need to. I can, if I need to organize or reformat this slide deck with touch, I certainly can. I can pick up my stylus or my mouse. But in the end, it's PowerPoint. So what matters is presenting. So as I present, the first thing that you'll notice is I didn't actually hit function F5 or window anything. I simply clicked present in PowerPoint. That's because PowerPoint and Windows 8 work together to switch me to the right mode. I was in duplicate mode, now I'm in extend mode. PowerPoint simply does that for me now, which is great. It saves a lot of help desk calls, it turns out. I also, because I'm on a touchscreen, I can swipe forward in my presentation. I can zoom in because I want you perhaps to see a little closer in this slide, something that I'm working on. I can pick up my stylus and use my stylus as a laser pointer to make things a little more clear for you. Instead of having to perhaps do this, which might have been the traditional model, I can also move this to pen mode. And again, I can say this 25% is not good enough. I need 30% to charity. And so I can do quite a few things right from this UI, but what you don't see is what I'm seeing, which is what's called a new presenter view in PowerPoint, the new PowerPoint. So I'm going to switch screens to give you a look at that. So this is what I'm looking at. You can see right here, I had the option to select which pen input I had, whether that's laser pointer, pen, or highlighter. I could quickly zoom in on that UI. That's what I was looking at as I dragged around. I get my next slide right here. I get my notes. If I can't read the notes on the form factor I'm on, I can zoom in on them. I can click to transition just like I did before. You see it's playing a transition. It warns you, and then it lands the new slide on there. And how many times have you ever, some people in this room giving a presentation, somebody asks you a question, you know it's in slide 32 in the appendix, and you're on slide 3, and you start going next, 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 next. But what you really want to do is just look brilliant and make that the very next slide you present. On the other side of that presentation, all anybody saw was the next slide pop right up and you answered their question. We really want to enable people to be more confident presenters with this tool, and tools like the new presenter view in PowerPoint make you present more confidently. So let me jump back and end the presentation. That's one of my favorite transitions. Was that for the transition, or was that for the, okay, for the transition. All right, I'll take that. That's all right. So one more presentation, one more demo, and then I'm going to talk about something slightly different than near and dear to your hearts, and then I promise we'll even get back to another demo. The Link, one of my favorite applications, some cool enhancements to Link in the new Office. So right here, I'm going to show you that right away. Right here you can see I have a meeting that's already going on in Outlook, my Outlook reminder window. I'm just going to join that online. And you can see though I have a meeting already going on with a few colleagues. And it looks like my colleagues were not in the meeting right when it started, but now they're joining, and that's good. Let me start my own video and audio right here. You can see I have a little preview of my video in case I want to make sure that my skin coloring is right, because it appears that I may have gotten a little more sun here in the Gold Coast than I wanted to. That's awesome lighting right there. I'm missing Alina. I don't know where Alina is, but Adam, can you hear me over there?
Yep. Can hear you.
Oh, great.
Fine.
Nice to see you guys. So what you're looking at is a multi-party high-definition video conference in the new Link. Each of these folks participating remotely on a high-definition camera, all routing through Link, getting a wonderful new meeting experience. I can have as many people as I want in this. I've got 4 showing up across with my own video right there. If I want to zoom in a little bit on Adam, you're about to become famous, Adam. I can lock the spotlight on him. Thank you very much for the dramatization. If I want to change my view to a speaker view, it'll actually give me a view of the person who's being the noisiest. Since Adam's the only one with a headset on, he is the speaker. And I can also present content here. In this case, I actually want to bring up a PowerPoint presentation that's already in my meeting. And you'll see what happens right away is that the PowerPoint web app launches right inside of Link. It's loading up, unfortunately, a large PowerPoint. Give me just a second. And as that PowerPoint web app loads up, you can see that I can start navigating through the slides. The great thing about this is that in addition to having a PowerPoint web app interactive presentation, I can also, on this touchscreen, pick up my stylus and make the same markups that I was making earlier. Let's pick a good red color. I'm going to do the same thing and say, no, team's got to do 30%. But because we're in a link meeting, the folks in the meeting also have the opportunity to interact with it. You can see that they're highlighting some text right now and changing slide content as we present. A fully immersive interactive conversation with video across all individuals, with voice integration, with PowerPoint web app integration. This could be a OneNote. This could be a whiteboard that we're sharing. And I can also... The guy next door is telling better jokes. Do you guys hear the laughing going on next door? I'm sorry about that. I can stop my video as I need to. I can restart it to walk away. Thank you guys very much. I'm going to jump back out of the link meeting. Everybody wave. This is your 15 minutes of fame.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Adam. I appreciate it. Jump out of the meeting. So I think I know what most people in the room are probably thinking right about now. They're thinking, I love the new office, right? Because that's awesome. But I also know what really comes to mind when I have a conversation at TechEd, which is that everyone in this room probably at some level is responsible for deploying the new office. And I know that's not always the most fun part of your day. We understand that at Microsoft. It's one of the things that we struggle with. I mentioned at the beginning, we have 90,000 employees, we use the heck out of this product, we have to deploy it too. So one of the things we've done with the new office is fundamentally changed the way we built and deploy Office from a technology, at the fundamentals of the technology, to make your lives easier, to make it easier to deploy Office, to make it more easier to deploy Office more rapidly, whether you use the tools that you're accustomed to using, like System Center. I won't mention the alternatives to System Center, but you're familiar with them. And also, of course, if you decide to use our new cloud services with Office 365. So one of my colleagues, Quinn Nickel right here, is going to give you a little bit of a look at how that change affects your day on a daily basis.
Right. Thanks, Michael. Well, good morning. Good morning, good day, and as I say in my home country of Canada, good day, A. Is that not like the most overused Canadian joke? But I had to do it. So first of all, it's great to be back here. I was actually here a few years ago when we launched the Office 2010 Tech Preview. How many of you were here back then? Anyone for that event? Well, back then, you missed actually getting a netbook back then. So they gave out netbooks to everybody. And one of those netbooks were Windows 7 and Office 2010. And Australia was actually the first place that we launched our tech preview, which no one had seen it before. So it's kind of sentimental to come back now and actually have you be the first country to actually see Office 15 or our new office. So it's great. So thanks, Michael, for doing that. As you guys know, deployment is hard. You know, even though we came in, we had to come in a few days early to do those machines for the tech preview, it took us a while. And that was just a few machines for this conference. We know from our customers and yourselves that it just, you know, we come up with great new releases, everyone's excited, and then you sit down and reality sort of hits for us IT pros, and it's like, wow, you know, we're going to take 2 years to roll this release out, or even longer, or in a lot of cases, we maybe skip a release, and from our perspective, we wanted to fix that, and so we started working back in the 2010 timeframe on a new technology for deploying and managing Office, and I get to show that to you this morning. So up here, I've got basically a virtual machine running. So this is just like a Windows 7 client running a virtual machine. And I'm going to show you what the new experience is like for installing Office. Our new technology we call Click to Run. As it sounds, I just click on it and it runs. I'm going to go up here in the Task Manager and show you the process that it kicks off. Just give me a second here. And I don't know if you can see this on the screen or not. I'll just resize it. So you see it says Microsoft Office Click to Run. All of a sudden, the splash screen comes up. So it's actually installing Office. I didn't have to touch any buttons. I just did my single click. You'll see that it's actually configuring. If you can see the percentage in the bottom, 62, 63, 64%. What's happening right now is Office is actually streaming down and installing as we speak. And so here you see, Office installed, done. Don't you just love this part? I love this part. I do this all day long. Well, to be fair, it's not totally installed, but it's pretty good. What's happening is actually, because we stream Office in the new technology, we're able to actually get an experience up in front of the user very quickly. And so what's happening is that I've got my Welcome to Office splash screen that comes up. I'm going to click through it. So it'll ask me a few questions if I'm a user, depending on how I'd like to configure it. So in this case, for this demo, I'm actually just going to say no thanks for signing in. Because I'm not actually connected on this virtual machine to the internet. So I'm going to say no to those ones, and away we go. So it's asked me just a few questions. Right now, it's like streaming in the background and installing the entire application. If we take a look in the start menu, you'll see that it's already thrown it up into the menu. And let me just go in and start an application. We'll start up Word. And as you can see in the bottom, it says, hey, it's actually, oh, let me just close this one down.
This is where all of you help us praying to the demo.
Yeah, that's right.
Regular user account.
Let me just try this one again here. See if we get this to go. So quiet in here. It was so exciting, and then it was like, oh, what happened? There you go.
Woo! Word
art. It's up and running. First preview. So that's kind of exciting. Then the other thing we can do is, so that's just on one machine, one experience for an individual user, but we don't roll out one machine, one user in IT land. We know that, right? We roll out, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands. So on this machine that I'm running right here, I'm actually, if you take a look at the screen, I'm actually running a HP EliteBook laptop, a great little machine. It's got like 32 gig of RAM in it, a couple SSDs, running Windows Server 2012, great new release, as you guys know. And on it, I've got 15 virtual machines that I'm running with Windows clients on them. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to kick off a process to actually install Office 15 on all of those virtual machines. So we just did a little batch file here. I just double-click on it, and it's going to kick off a process, and it's going to install, while I'm standing here, it's actually going to be installing Office on all of these 15 machines. At the same time, just to give you a little bit of comparison, I'm going to show you how we install Office 2010 with MSI. Now, this is something I'm sure you guys have all done. You know, MSI was a great technology, but of course, we were able to improve upon it quite a bit with this next release. So this is your standard Office 2010 install screen that comes up. Let's give it a second. And we're going to see, so we're going to do one instance of MSI. So we've got one instance of MSI running on this one virtual machine that I just installed Office 15 on. And at the same time, all other 14 virtual machines are actually getting an installation of Office 15 at the same time. So if we take a look, I'll go and click onto one. You'll see, one sec here. You just pick one up. Sorry, my windows are resizing in kind of a funny way here. Here you go, one of those virtual machines already done. Just like we saw in the very first one, it's already gone in and streamed Office and down. If I take a look, you can see the splash screen. So basically what happens is on all of these machines, all 15, they all install just like they did in the first machine that I showed you within, you know, basically a minute. So it scales really, really nicely. That's
Tell
fantastic.
Me, what else is running on these machines, though? I see a bunch of logos, Office 2003, Office 2007.
It gets better, as they say. So another thing that we noticed with talking with you as customers, it's not just deploying Office and getting it out there, but it's also dealing with things like app compatibility, user change management. And so with this version of Office, with Office 15, you're now able to deploy side by side. You can have Office 15 running at the same time that you have Office 2003, 2007, or 2010. Pretty amazing. And it's wonderful because you can actually, not only can you run with older versions of Office, but you'll also be able to run with older versions of, or with newer versions of Office when we go to 16 or 17. So it's gonna be our deployment technology sort of going forward. The other thing that's actually pretty nice about it is when we do updates. You know, when we install Office now, the way Click2Run works, it's a fully virtualized implementation of Office. And so when we do updates, we actually just have to stream out these little blocks into a file copy operation now instead of actually applying. So instead of a, you know, 800 megabyte service pack that you have to go and download, you're going to be basically just doing maybe, you know, somewhere between 25 and 50 megabytes of file block and copying it down. And you can do updates while you're running and using Office.
And that's one of the thing that's most fundamentally different about the new Office from a deployment perspective. So every installation of Office is taking place by this application virtualization technology. You can see as Quinn jumps around, all of these machines are installing Office. What they're actually doing is sending these very small file blocks down. And these small file blocks are not a broken apart MSI executable that you have to wait to fully download. They're the componentry of Office. At first we send the UI framework, now the Word application can open. Then we start sending features down one at a time. And we'll be smart enough to reprioritize those features to respond to the user's behavior. So when that first 60 seconds finishes, an Office is on the machine, and as far as the user's concerned, that's it. They're done installing Office. Behind the scenes, we continue to stream application capabilities. For example, word mail merge, not the most common feature for every Word user, probably not the first feature we'll deploy. However, if the user clicks mail merge, we'll pop up a little note and say, hey, streaming that feature down, and we'll reprioritize the blocks dynamically and send mail merge down next. If the user opens Excel first, which isn't the most common application first used in Office, we'll reprioritize the blocks and deploy the rest of Excel first. We'll change the deployment model reactively based on the user's behavior real time for every user as we're streaming bits down. So that deployment model both helps us with that initial gigantic deployment of Office, but it also helps us, as Quinn said, deploy updates on an incremental basis, most of which won't even require the user to exit the application. Because unless they're actively using the componentry we're updating, it can be updated and streamed in the background without actually even interrupting the user at all. At worst case, it might ask them to exit the app and come back in. So a real change in the way we deploy Office from the ground up. And from a speed perspective, you can see what we're seeing right here. We're still about a quarter of the way through the installation of Office 2010, and where are we? We have how many of the apps are in progress?
We're pretty much mostly installed on all of the VMs, except for the initial setup screen that I just have to walk through with my mouse.
Oh, yeah,
of course, in the future version, you'll be able to just have that as a silent install as you'd expect, and so you won't actually have to have user interaction to do that. But the speed is fantastic, the updates is fantastic, the side-by-side. One of the other things that's really interesting with this technology, though, is we're also taking this technology and we're putting it together in something we call Office Subscription. And Office Subscription is a new offer where we're actually going to be moving from a per-device license model. If you're familiar with Office today, or you buy Office, you buy it for a device and have to manage it that way, to a per-user model. So it's a big change. And in that per-user model, you'll basically be able to get Office for a user. A user will have to have up to 5 devices that they can use. They can use whatever devices they want, just they can have 5 at one time. They'll all be done through this technology, through the click to run. And then at the same time, they'll also get access to all of our mobile applications as well. So it's going to be a great, great value proposition for users, great for businesses, great to manage. So we're really using the technology in an efficient way.
And how many of you have signed up for the Office 365 preview in some way since we launched it in July? Got a few hands. Have any of you installed Office via click to run yet from the preview? You got a few people in the room. That is the way that Office is deployed via the service moving forward. However, it's important to note that we recognize a lot of you don't want your users actually reaching out to the cloud to install Office. So this application virtualization package that we deliver Office via the cloud, our cloud service in Office 365 via, will also be something we can deliver to you. Same way that you can traditionally deploy software via something like System Center, or in the same way you think about Windows Update services today, we can give you that virtualized package of Office so that you can do the app V deployments locally from your own distribution points if you're a well-distributed deployment model, or from a central distribution point if you need to, using whatever third-party or Microsoft software deployment package you use today. So you gain the benefit of this new application virtualization technology built into Office, whether you use our cloud service or whether you deploy through traditional on-prem. Recognize both are an important change in the way we deliver.
Let me, and I'll just answer a few questions that I always get before you ask them. And so one is, this new deployment technology we're putting into all versions of Office, all the way from consumers to small business to mid-market to enterprise. And from a consumer perspective, you can see it's a great experience. You can do it right off the web, stream it down. But for enterprises and even for mid-market customers, you know, you're managing, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of machines, and we know that. And so we designed this so that you can actually use it in your existing environment. It works with System Center, it works with third-party software distribution systems. There's many different ways that you can actually deploy it still, so you can actually use all your existing methods but still get all the benefits. In terms of updates, I talked about, well, always, you know, you're always up to date, but at the same time, IT will still get to control when updates come. So from the consumer, they'll just come automatically. For businesses, you'll actually be able to look at them and decide, do I want to push this update out? Do I not want to push this update out? But when it comes time to do that, it'll be very easy, very efficient, and very easy to roll back as well. So we're pretty excited about this. We've spent, you know, a fair bit of time architecting 15 for this, and we hope that you try it and get the benefits. We've also got a number of sessions this week to come where we're going to dive into the details, sort of what's under the covers. So please come to that, and I think we have a slide coming up that actually lists all the sessions. So.
Probably not, but that's all right. There are two stories, though, that I want to tell about click-to-run technology that I think are really important. One is about the most successful update to Office ever in history. Here, let me jump to this question slide. We'll take some questions after that. One is the most successful update to Office in history, and that is that it's little known, so you guys get to be some of the first people to hear the story. We released Office 365 Preview on July 16th. At an event in San Francisco in the U.S. that Steve Ballmer keynoted for us. We were very excited. And we had this very specific build of Office that we had settled on in beta that was going to be the build that we were going to distribute to everybody via click to run. Many of you probably deployed it if you tried the trial out. Turned out about 24 hours later, we realized we had a small bug that we discovered that we needed to fix. It's beta software. Didn't give us a ton of heartburn that a bug was discovered months and months and months before we shipped. However, we wanted to get everybody that update. So we used click to run to push a very small differential update to Office that was deployed to every single Office 365 preview customer that had signed up in the hundreds of thousands of users without ever interrupting any of them. No requirement to exit any of the apps, no reboots required, no flags, notifications, simply updated about 4 build numbers. In the UI, if you went in and looked at the specific dot build that you had been deployed on the 16th, you would have noticed about a week later that it had moved up 4 dot builds. The most successful update of Office in history across the broadest number of users as far as we know. The other thing that I think is interesting is that this is the way we deploy Office at Microsoft. We have 90,000 seats, not a small enterprise, in what we call dog food, internally eating our own dog food, using all our beta software on a daily basis. In the Office division, we're at about 10,000 seats using the daily builds of click to run. Meaning that I get a new version of Office deployed to my machine every morning. Imagine that, right? Imagine that new requirement in your IT organizations. Every day, you're going to deploy a new version of Office. That's what our IT organization has to respond to, because we ship this stuff, and we think it's important to experience it. So in about 10,000 seats across the Office division in our core dog fooding environment, we deploy daily versions of Office. And there are mornings that I come in, and I simply see a notification that this build's being deployed. I click yes, and I turn and sip my coffee, and the update's done. Sometimes it's a bigger update, and it takes a minute, maybe a minute and a half. And I get a full new version of Office dropped on my machine via click to run. It is a tremendous change in the way we deploy, and I encourage you to go to the sessions to learn more about this technology, because it really does change our lives, and we hope it changes yours for the better, so you can enjoy that cup of coffee a little more every morning. So we have a ton of other sessions. A bunch of folks came from Redmond, our corporate team, to speak in both the Exchange and Link tracks, the SharePoint and Office tracks. A whole bunch of them are in the front of the room over here, as well as us on stage. We have about 15 minutes to answer questions. I think before we jump into them, which we'll totally take them, I have to tell you all, if you went to the floor last night, you saw that there was the chair, the Emperor chair with the 3 monitors and the flight simulator in it. We're leaving that chair behind in Australia. Somebody attending check is going to win it. The T-shirt that you can grab on the way out the door of this session, many of you I noticed grabbed on the way in the door of the session, actually is your ticket to competing in that competition. I highly recommend that you grab one. We'd love to see somebody win the flight simulator competition, and somebody who came to this first kickoff session win that chair and take it home. I'm sure your husband or wife will not mind if it's sitting in the living room. It's a beautiful piece of artwork. So please come back to the booth and show us what you got on flight simulator. I'm sorry?
That was good. One last thing. How many of you are TechNet or MSDN subscribers? Most of you? Fantastic. Because last time we were here, we brought something special. We brought 2010 Tech Preview. And this year, we're bringing something special, too. And that is for all MSDN and TechNet subscribers, you're going to have a full subscription to Office 365, the full meal deal. So Exchange, Link, SharePoint, everything. And it's yours to use. That'll ship a little bit later this year. You'll get it through your benefits. But you heard it first here, and we're excited to bring it to you. So.
Cool. That's very good.
Awesome.
Very cool stuff. So we have 15 minutes to take questions. We might take a few in the big room if you guys have any, but we also want to make sure you guys get to come down and talk to the many folks on the team and get the more individual questions. Anybody want to kick it off? Go for it. So the question is there link integration with the people hub and Windows 8? So the Windows 8 people app is actually an application. That application is an ActiveSync client. So in the back end, if you're running Exchange and Link, either in Office 365 or on-prem, and you're syncing that people hub by ActiveSync, Link and that app will actually see the same back end contact list. The two client apps don't synchronize with each other in any way. They're both clients to the server environments independently. If you're using the People Hub to answer, I think the question you're probably asking as something other than an ActiveSync client and simply adding context to it, those will not be synced up with Link in any way. However, if you're using the People app against your Exchange ActiveSync environment, you're looking at the same contact store and the same address list. I might have answered that question. I'm not totally sure. Feel free to walk up and follow up if I didn't. I saw that you had raised your hand also.
The short answer is yes, and probably the longer answer is to come to the deployment session, because we're going to go through this in quite detail, and it's great. It's just wonderful when you see it. So
we still will deliver the traditional MSI packages, and their sort of traditional rules still apply if you choose to deploy via MSI. However, with Click-to-Run, yeah, the short answer is yes. You should come to Click-to-Run session and ask really detailed questions of one of the guys in the front of the room here. Or walk up to this guy right here wearing the Office 365 shirt and ask him the question. He's got his hand up in the air. What time is it, 9:45 tomorrow? 9:45 tomorrow, Click-to-Run session. Perfect. Next door.
Awesome. So you like the move office? What do you think? Good?
Got one in the back? Yeah. Shameless attempt
plug.
At getting
we like
applause.
It.
All right. Yes? Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. Do you need an AppV server and AppV license? The answer is no. So many of you may have used application virtualization or you did the Softricity acquisition that got us the technology. A lot of customers used that separate application virtualization service and license. All of this is now integrated into Office. You do not require the separate license. You do not have to deploy application virtualization separately.
Right.
It is all built right into the app. We actually put the AppV client into the delivery package, and it goes first and then streams the whole app down underneath it.
But if you do have AppV infrastructure,
you can continue to use it.
You continue to use it, and it actually adds value to it because you can actually manage the packages with the AppV infrastructure.
Yeah.
So you don't need it, but if you have it, it will actually add value.
Particularly if you do a lot of Office customization, if you don't want to take our Office package and AppV package and deploy it, but you want to customize, then you'd want to continue down that path. The one right here. Yeah, go. Yeah. Yes. So the question was, do you need PDF editing software anymore because of what I showed you with PDF Reflow and Word? I cannot answer that question for you. You should determine whether you need PDF editing software based on your specific corporate needs. But if you have the need to open PDF files in Word to extract data, to copy paste, to make edits, save back out in Word format, you have that capability with the new Office. In all seriousness, the expansive capabilities of some PDF editing software that are used for things like newspaper, print, that is not what I'm showing you in this application. However, we think for the majority of business needs, Word is a suitable PDF consumer. thanks, yeah. Yeah.
We in government have a significant issue with that with some of our remote sites as well. So the download in streaming, if it breaks while it's streaming down, have you experienced any?
Well, there's a couple of ways that, and again, we'll go through a lot of the options. The question was, what happens if you start streaming and the connection breaks, or you just don't have a very fast connection or a reliable connection? And so we'll go through it in detail to more of the different architectures you can use. But one easy way to think about it is that actually for businesses, you can actually pull just the image down once, and then you can just distribute it from there on. And that's actually what we recommend for most businesses. So you're not reliant, your users are not pulling, constantly from a server, which is wonderful. The other thing that's nice though is that if for some reason your it stops, it'll just pause, and then when it gets another connection, it'll just start up again. So that's what happened to me yesterday. I downloaded a new image, I started here, then I had to run back to my hotel. I just stopped, I ran back to my hotel, connected onto the Wi-Fi, and it just started up. So it works pretty well.
And this is again because we're not breaking an MSI file up into small pieces. We're sending application componentry down piece by piece.
In fact, I was even running Outlook yesterday while my Office was half installed, basically streaming, and I was still using Outlook as I was walking back to my hotel room. So
perhaps not the typical use case.
Maybe not recommended to everybody, but it worked.
BitTorrent joke?
It's not saturating the whole link.
That's right.
Correct.
It's not. Correct. It'll trickle it down absolutely. Perfect.
A lot of people looking for answers. Nobody asking any more questions, though. Oh, I got one back there. There we go. Yeah. So in flash fill, if the raw data changes, does it dynamically update the other columns? No, it's not actually linked data. It's not creating that. Once it's much like a template application. So like as long as it's like a, when you do a, it behaves just like the old duplicate function. As long as that in within that column, the data is all contextually handled, which is why the fixes and the pattern matching repairs that I made to get changed. But where I got the source data is not linked in that way, and where you could update it. You'd want to create data linkage if you want to do that. Yep. No, you'd have to redo the flash fill. Yeah. Yeah, so if you it's the data in column one is not linked to the data in column two if you're doing flash fill. It's actually simply a duplicate line down the middle. You can do the flash fill over again, but yeah, it's not linked. You can, of course, link it by simply making cell references to the column two instead of typing a name. You can simply type the cell reference, and that'll create a linkage permanently. Got one there and then one there, one, two. Go for it, yeah.
Sharing email between sites, and you mentioned that you can do between sites and access the email.
Yeah.
And if we're using to 10 now,
yep.
Where 13 shape, that
works. So actually, the team, this, what I showed you was a site, the question was about site mailboxes. So with a site mailbox, when you provision a site mailbox to a team site, an Exchange mailbox is provisioned. It does require both Exchange 2013 and SharePoint 2013. It has no client dependency in this situation. So what is actually happening is the mailbox is being provisioned. It's being linked to the administrative context that owns the team site. No user ever logs in as that. Nobody needs to worry about it. It's a shared mailbox in Exchange. Every user that is a member of the team site is automatically created as a member having access to the shared mailbox. And when you click on inbox in SharePoint, it opens an embedded OO window and views the inbox. No client dependency, uses Outlook web app. So again, as long as you're in the two server clients, you don't need the client update. Now, if you get Outlook 2013 client, you gain the advantage of the auto discovery provisioning the mailbox and document library to Outlook client. That capability that I showed only works with Outlook 2013. It won't work with 2010. But the back end doesn't require the client to function. And then there was one over here. Yeah.
Link multipoint video, is that going to be available on mobile devices as well?
I don't want to answer that question. We look forward to evolving the video capabilities of our global. Thank you for that. The current plan, it wouldn't, our current mobile apps won't support the multi-party video view in the client application. We will continue in that direction, but we don't have that today. It's really optimized for this rich, immersive sort of big screen experience, or at least computer monitor or tablet experience versus a little phone experience. What was our test? Was like 1,000? Yeah, we did 1,000. We've been running 1,000 person tests at Microsoft. So I'm sure you do a lot of multi-party video. So Link will actually automatically throttle down so the way that Link works, and you can stop by the booth and take the stand and look at the PPI board, which we can bring it up and give you an idea how this would look. We'll put the what we call a standing row of five people in big video, and then we'll put a seated row of additional people up in smaller video, and then we'll hide another set of people that are not actually active in the meeting. And we'll constantly swap those people out based on voice, based on who's speaking and actively participating, so that anybody's view at one point might actually only have 10 video participants, even if there's 1,000 people in the meeting, because the sort of guy over in the corner who's silent, sipping his coffee and reading his email is not important to the conversation. So we'll rotate your view based on who's speaking and who's engaging and who the most recent speakers are. But we are actually running active tests at Microsoft with 1,000 participants on video all at the same time against Office 365 in the service. So and working. Because again, we're not sending the video for all 1,000 people at the same time. And if you do point to point, we'll actually connect you directly for video. And in multi-party, we'll route the video through Link. So we actually will even make smart decisions there.
There's one here.
So clients, the question about Link client server dependencies, Link client, legacy Link client versions connect to the new version of the server just fine. You don't get all of the multi-party video. A lot of features are only in the new client, but you can join a new Link 2013 meeting from a OCS or I'm not 100% sure I'm right on that, but from a Link 2010 client connect. Yeah, invite, right, in 2013 we'll collect to a Link server as well, a legacy Link server. We have so 2010 and 2013 are intercompatible in both ways. Yeah, we don't have no OC2, yeah, so R2 supports out. Okay, so just Link 2010 and 2013, right. Back over here. I'm sorry? Next year?
You can get the preview today.
Preview today. Office will be, GA, will, general availability will be, it'll be next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At once?
No, all at once. Actually, we actually bringing the whole of the Office portfolio, server, Exchange server, Link, Visio project, and the whole Outlook client as one vehicle at the same time, all shipping together. Yes, sir. A few more minutes. Legacy what databases? Sorry. Oh, Access databases. I don't know about legacy. That's a question I don't know the answer to. Do you know the answer to that?
SQL backend. We've got a SQL backend.
Yeah. If you moved to Access 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. So that's actually, you should walk up and ask that question to somebody who's smarter on Access than I am. But the Access, so yeah, if Access 2013 moves to a SQL backend, then yeah, you could move to Access 2013 and then you could push it into SQL. You can push SQL Azure theoretically in the cloud if you were using a SQL Azure tenant. With probably a combination of somebody on our team and somebody from the Azure team over that could have this conversation at the stand in more detail if you really want to talk through the architecture. You should look for any of these folks. Yeah, Yanni and the... in the Office 365 shirt tends to be able to answer every question that I throw at him, so he's a good bet. Follow up if you want, and we'll schedule some time at the booth to meet and talk about it.
Great.
One more over here. I got one more. We got a couple more minutes.
Yep.
On the licensing that you talked about earlier on.
Per user.
So the way to think about it is, like, we still will have our existing licensing today with our volume licensing with our per device. So we'll still have that as an option, but we're adding a new option now. And so the way the new option works is you move to the per user. So you basically buy, I'll try to think of a simple example. Let's say you want 5 users. And so you would buy, it's a subscription offering though. So you pay in a subscription format. You'll get 5 users, and then for each user, when you provision your user, they can actually have up to 5 devices running Office, and of course, mobile as well. The device option we'll still keep, but we'll also have this new per user option, and it's pretty attractive for businesses. So if you think about having some employees, you know, today everybody has more than one device, so it's a nice way to actually be able to handle the multiple devices. And even if, let's say, they go home and they want to use it at their home, they can actually they can log in through the portal and actually use it at home as well.
Even if it's a Mac, PC?
Yep, and a Mac or a PC. So
the context I was coming from was from the call center environment, where you've got a lot more subscribers than you have got devices, you've got more agents than you've actually got desks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in that scenario, you can carry on down the route of carrying on the devices for subscription.
Correct, yep.
Yeah, if you want it, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing
don't
we didn't
go per user. Yeah.
The other thing we didn't show in this subscription model also, we have the concept of having, you know, your settings and, you know, you're signing in basically. Office knows who you are. And so now it'll roam your settings, it'll know, you know, what documents did you use last. When you open up a document, it'll take you back to the spot where you just finished off. And that'll work across devices. All you need to do is log in. Or even if you log in through a browser and you use the web apps, it'll still know exactly who you are and bring up those settings. So it's really the concept. We kind of call it Office as a service. So it's really the concept of a service, and in the consumer world, we're all familiar with that. With streaming TV or video services, we kind of just expect those to work that way. Well, now we're bringing some of those same benefits to Office as a service. So it's pretty exciting.
So we will stay up here for a few more questions. Thank you guys very much. Please do your evals. We are held accountable to the results of those evals, so I appreciate the feedback.
Yeah.
And we hope to see you at the stand later today. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.